Shelby County, Alabama, versus Eric H. Holder, Jr., Attorney General. Supreme Court of the United States, June 25, 2013. Chief Justice Roberts delivered the opinion of the court. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 employed extraordinary measures to address an extraordinary problem. Section 5 of the Act required states to obtain federal permission before enacting any law related to voting, a drastic departure from the basic principles of federalism. And Section 4 of the Act applied that requirement only to some states, an equally dramatic departure from the principle that all states enjoy equal sovereignty. This was strong medicine, but Congress determined it was needed to address entrenched racial discrimination in voting, an insidious and pervasive evil which had been perpetuated in certain parts of our country through unremitting and ingenious defiance of the Constitution. As we explained in upholding the law, exceptional conditions can justify legislative measures not otherwise appropriate. Reflecting the unprecedented nature of these measures, they were scheduled to expire after 5 years. Nearly 50 years later, they are still in effect. Indeed, they have been made more stringent and are now scheduled to last until 2031. There is no denying, however, that the conditions that originally justified these measures no longer characterize voting in the covered jurisdictions. By 2009, the racial gap in voter registration and turnout was lower in the states originally covered by Section 5 than it was nationwide. Since that time, Census Bureau data indicate that African-American voter turnout has come to exceed white voter turnout in 5 of the 6 states originally covered by Section 5, with a gap in the 6th state of less than 0.5%. At the same time, voter discrimination still exists. No one doubts that. The question is whether the Act's extraordinary measures, including its disparate treatment of the states, continue to satisfy constitutional requirements. As we put it a short time ago, the Act imposes current burdens and must be justified by current needs. Part 1, Section A. The 15th Amendment was ratified in 1870 in the wake of the Civil War. It provides that the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude, and it gives Congress the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. The first century of congressional enforcement of the amendment, however, can only be regarded as a failure. In the 1890s, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia began to enact literacy tests for voter registration and to employ other methods designed to prevent African Americans from voting. Congress passed statutes outlawing some of these practices and facilitating litigation against them. But litigation remained slow and expensive, and the states came up with new ways to discriminate as soon as existing ones were struck down. Voter registration of African Americans barely improved. Inspired by the Civil Rights Movement, Congress responded in 1965 with the Voting Rights Act. Section 2 was enacted to forbid in all 50 states any standard, practice, or procedure imposed or applied to deny or abridge the right of any citizen of the United States to vote on account of race or color. The current version forbids any standard, practice, or procedure that results in a denial or abridgment of the right of any citizen of the United States to vote on account of race or color. Both the federal government and individuals have sued to enforce Section 2, and injunctive relief is available in appropriate cases to block voting laws from going into effect. Section 2 is permanent, applies nationwide, and is not at issue in this case. Other sections targeted only some parts of the country. At the time of the Act's passage, these covered jurisdictions were those states or political subdivisions that had maintained a test or device as a prerequisite to voting as of November 1, 1964, and had less than 50% voter registration or turnout in the 1964 presidential election. Such tests or devices included literacy and knowledge tests, good moral character requirements, the need for vouchers from registered voters, and the like. A covered jurisdiction could bail out of coverage if it had not used a test or device in the preceding 5 years for the purpose or with the effect of denying or abridging the right to vote on account of race or color. In 1965, the covered states included Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, and Virginia. The additional covered subdivisions included 39 counties in North Carolina and one in Arizona. In those jurisdictions, Section 4 of the Act banned all such tests or devices. Section 5 provided that no change in voting procedures could take effect until it was approved by federal authorities in Washington, D.C., either the Attorney General or a court of three judges. A jurisdiction could obtain such preclearance only by proving that the change had neither the purpose nor the effect of denying or abridging the right to vote on account of race or color. Sections 4 and 5 were intended to be temporary. They were set to expire after 5 years. In South Carolina v. Katzenbach, we upheld the 1965 Act against constitutional challenge, explaining that it was justified to address voting discrimination where it persists on a pervasive scale. In 1970, Congress reauthorized the Act for another 5 years and extended the coverage formula in Section 4B to jurisdictions that had a voting test and less than 50% voter registration or turnout as of 1968. That swept in several counties in California, New Hampshire, and New York. Congress also extended the ban in Section 4A on tests and devices nationwide. In 1975, Congress reauthorized the Act for 7 more years and extended its coverage to jurisdictions that had a voting test and less than 50% voter registration or turnout as of 1972. Congress also amended the definition of test or device to include the practice of providing English-only voting materials in places where over 5% of the voting-age citizens spoke a single language other than English. As a result of these amendments, the states of Alaska, Arizona, and Texas, as well as several counties in California, Florida, Michigan, New York, North Carolina, and South Dakota, became covered jurisdictions. Congress correspondingly amended Sections 2 and 5 to forbid voting discrimination on the basis of membership in a language minority group, in addition to discrimination on the basis of race or color. And finally, Congress made the nationwide ban on tests and devices permanent. In 1982, Congress reauthorized the Act for 25 years, but did not alter its coverage formula. Congress did, however, amend the bailout provisions allowing political subdivisions of covered jurisdictions to bail out. Among other prerequisites for bailout, jurisdictions and their subdivisions must not have used a forbidden test or device, failed to receive preclearance, or lost a Section 2 suit in the 10 years prior to seeking bailout. We upheld each of these reauthorizations against constitutional challenge. In 2006, Congress again reauthorized the Voting Rights Act for 25 years, again without change to its coverage formula. Congress also amended Section 5 to prohibit more conduct than before. Section 5 now forbids voting changes with any discriminatory purpose, as well as voting changes that diminish the ability of citizens on account of race, color, or language minority status to elect their preferred candidates of choice. Shortly after this reauthorization, a Texas utility district brought suit seeking to bail out from the Act's coverage and, in the alternative, challenging the Act's constitutionality. A 3-judge district court explained that only a state or political subdivision was eligible to seek bailout under the statute, and concluded that the utility district was not a political subdivision, a term that encompassed only counties, parishes, and voter registering subunits. The district court also rejected the constitutional challenge. We reversed. We explained that normally the court will not decide a constitutional question if there's some other ground upon which to dispose of the case, concluding that underlying constitutional concerns, among other things, compelled a broader reading of the bailout provision. We construed the statute to allow the utility district to seek bailout. In doing so, we expressed serious doubts about the Act's continued constitutionality. We explained that Section 5 imposes substantial federalism costs and differentiates between the states despite our historic tradition that the states enjoy equal sovereignty. We also noted that things have changed in the South. Voter turnout and registration rates now approach parity. Blatantly discriminatory evasions of federal decrees are rare, and minority candidates hold office at unprecedented levels. Finally, we questioned whether the problems that Section 5 meant to address were still concentrated in the jurisdictions singled out for preclearance. 8 members of the court subscribed to those views, and the remaining member would have held the act unconstitutional. Ultimately, however, the court's construction of the bailout provision left the constitutional issues for another day. Section B. Shelby County is located in Alabama, a covered jurisdiction. It has not sought bailout, as the Attorney General has recently objected to voting changes proposed from within the county. Instead, in 2010, the county sued the Attorney General and Federal District Court in Washington, D.C., seeking a declaratory judgment that Sections 4B and 5 of the Voting Rights Act are facially unconstitutional, as well as a permanent injunction against their enforcement. The district court ruled against the county and upheld the act. The court found that the evidence before Congress in 2006 was sufficient to justify reauthorizing Section 5 and continuing the Section 4B coverage formula. The Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit affirmed. In assessing Section 5, the D.C. Circuit considered 6 primary categories of evidence: Attorney General objections to voting changes, Attorney General requests for more information regarding voting changes, successful Section 2 suits in covered jurisdictions, the dispatching of federal observers to monitor elections in covered jurisdictions, Section 5 preclearance suits involving covered jurisdictions, and the deterrent effect of Section 5. After extensive analysis of the record, the court accepted Congress's conclusion that Section 2 litigation remained inadequate in the covered jurisdictions to protect the rights of minority voters, and that Section 5 was therefore still necessary. Turning to Section 4, the D.C. Circuit noted that the evidence for singling out the covered jurisdictions was less robust, and that the issue presented a close question. But the court looked to data comparing the number of successful Section 2 suits in different parts of the country. Coupling that evidence with the deterrent effect of Section 5, the court concluded that the statute continued to single out the jurisdictions in which discrimination is concentrated, and thus held that the coverage formula passed constitutional muster. Judge Williams dissented. He found no positive correlation between inclusion in Section 4B's coverage formula and low black registration or turnout. Rather, to the extent there was any correlation, it actually went the other way. Condemnation under Section 4B is a marker of higher black registration and turnout. Judge Williams also found that covered jurisdictions have far more black office holders as a proportion of black population than do uncovered ones. As to the evidence of successful Section 2 suits, Judge Williams disaggregated the reported cases by state and concluded that the 5 worst uncovered jurisdictions have worse records than 8 of the covered jurisdictions. He also noted that 2 covered jurisdictions, Arizona and Alaska, had not had any successful reported Section 2 suit brought against them during the entire 24 years covered by the data. Judge Williams would have held the coverage formula of Section 4B irrational and unconstitutional. We granted certiorari.